This is the Day Zero update for June 25th, 2017. I am Filippo D'Adolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm DeAndrea Victoria.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And yeah, it's the week after E3. I think most of us have mostly recovered by now.
Oh, not yet.
No, you're still, well...
I need more sleep, man. Fucking, it's ridiculous.
Well, you were at the Bethesda party, so you got an excuse.
Oh, yeah. So shit was lit.
Yeah,
so... Well, I thought a few people got DanRib drunk for free. I didn't think it was just Bethesda.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They were the main ones.
They were the main ones, yeah. Yeah, we probably should have paid attention to Devolver because their press conference was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... Next time, I think that's probably worth checking out.
They wouldn't even let anybody in. Fuck those guys.
Yeah, but...
Clearly an entire press conference that makes fun of press conferences.
That's exactly what they did, and it was amazing. And somebody died on stage, so that was good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But, yeah. So, yeah, we're here. We've got... because it's after E3, the news has just, like, opened up like a spigot. So I have no idea if we're going to get to all the stories, but we're going to try our best, you know, time and weather on my end permitting, because I could lose power at any moment. But yeah, so we're going to get right into it. So this week we've been playing some stuff, obviously, by the looks of things. For me, it's been a lot of the same. Diablo 3 and Tekken 7 are high in the rotation right now. Yeah, they're really good games. Tekken 7.
Long-term standbys.
Yeah. Yeah, Tekken 7 seems like one of those games that I don't plan to stop playing anytime soon, just because there's just so much there. Just got a ton of content, even though it is missing a couple of offline modes. Those aren't major ones, but I'm pretty sure those will end up being patched in at some point, or part of the season pass. But the big thing for me this week was I got my PS4 Pro, and I did the great PS4 migration. And because I didn't do the console to console, because the first thing I wanted to do was switch the drive out, I had to take a roundabout way of going about it. So, first thing I ended up having to do was, hooking up an external drive and... moving all of my games from my system drive to the external. That took a while.
Good
times. Yeah. Took a while, but it
good
worked.
Times.
Yeah. Then I made sure that PS Plus had backed up all of my saves. Yeah. That's easy enough to do. You just go into system storage and say, upload all the things. So that was easy enough.
I hope it doesn't whine at you about cloud storage.
Yeah, I had 10. There's 10 gigabytes, so I had enough space up there. Yeah, I think they've upped that recently from, I don't know how recently, but it used to be like 5 gigs, now it's 10. So
I think it was 2 at one point.
Yeah.
I think it was 1.
Oof. Yeah.
Updates would be 10 megs. So it was pretty easy to max that out.
Yeah.
All I know is that it really whined at me a few times during the early days of PS Plus.
Yeah. Now they bumped it up to 10, so I think that's probably going to be less of an issue, because, 10 gigs for save games is probably more than enough.
You can just scream, "Shut up, bitch," at your PS4.
Yeah. But that won't save your games, unfortunately.
No.
So, it is satisfying.
Turn off the boss of me, Sony.
Yeah.
I think the point is it'll just make you feel better.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So I got those up there and then did the drive swap. And then, installed my account back onto the PS4 Pro, making sure that I deactivated it from the other account first. The other PS4 first, rather. And then I did the whole move the games back to the system drive, and then moved all the stuff from the cloud to save back on, and that did it. It was a roundabout way of doing it, but it does work. The only thing it does not preserve is your folders and your themes, so I had to reset those up. So, but that's, that was like a 10-minute job afterwards.
Yeah, it's rather inconsequential.
Yeah. Top tip, external storage for PS4 can be used to move from console to console, which is something they don't mention.
Yeah.
So that's good to know. Other than that, yeah, the PS4 Pro, it's a better PS4. It's not anything groundbreaking or legendary or anything like that. It's just a better PS4. One thing I will say that if you've seen pictures of the PS4 Pro on the internet, it looks...
That thing looks like a George Foreman grill.
It looks better in person, to be quite honest.
It does.
Yeah, the pictures make it look like a stacked layer cake, but those ridges really aren't that pronounced. So it's just more of a slant.
How much fat does it get out of the games?
It that really depends on the games. I think Diablo 3 got most of the grease out, but it was hard to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't it have to be enhanced for the PS4 Pro, or does it get some natural enhancements just by being played on that system?
Yes and no. It has to be enhanced on the PS Pro to really take advantage of the hardware. But there's a setting you can turn on. I think we talked about it at one point, called Boost Mode, which basically allows the PS4 Pro to just run games unlocked. And that may or may not get you a performance increase. I noticed on Dragon Age it didn't do a heck of a lot because the frame rate's locked at 30. So
yeah, I imagine on some poorly coded games it might cause the system to lock.
I've never run into that. The only thing I've run into were like just weird visual glitches on some games. I don't know why that is, because I mean the only thing it's doing is running the GPU a little faster, so it shouldn't really do that. But whatevs.
Well, I just remember what happened when you unlock the drive speed on PS2 for PS1 games.
Yeah.
And there was a small handful of titles that just didn't know what to do with themselves.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I've never run into anything that significant on the PS4 yet. So
that's good.
Yeah. So that's been my week. How about you, Pat?
Again, a lot of standbys. Tekken 7, which will be one for quite some time. Wipeout Omega, which I still haven't finished squeezing the life out of yet. Stormblood, that's going to be on this list for the next 2 years, I'm sure. And then Puyo Puyo Tetris, I've been playing a little bit of since I kind of picked it up on a whim yesterday.
Mm.
And some of my streaming friends are into it, and I was going to get it anyway, so... Yeah.
That caused a fight at my house. Nice to...
What?
That caused a fight at my house.
Really?
What happened?
My wife thought we were ganging up on her. And because we play at 3-player.
Oh.
And, yeah. That's probably not a good idea.
No.
Don't play Tetris if you're married, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, I haven't picked that up yet. I really should. But, it's $40 on PS4, I think.
$40 on PS4, $30 on Switch.
Hmm.
It's bright.
It's very bright.
It is very bright. Like, that's not even a joke. Like, that is a very colorful game.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And just the whole crossover concept, they really made it work. I was surprised.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I'll give that
now a look. Now for the next step, all they have to do is add Puzzle Fighter.
Oh dear, just mash up all the things.
Well, I don't think it would be that hard to make it work, honestly.
No, there was already a version of Tetris that kind of had that mechanic in it anyway. So
yeah,
I think it could work. So how about you?
Yeah, I guess I should put Puzzle Fighter on that list because I've been playing that too.
Hmm. Yeah, good call.
So yeah.
So what about you, Brandon?
That's been my week,
Brandon. You still there?
Do we need to poke Brandon?
Perhaps. Or maybe.
Sorry, I forgot to unmute my microphone.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah, but anyway, so one of the primary things I've been getting back into Overwatch. I've switched over to PS4.
Right.
Oh, hey. Damn it!
I have Overwatch on PS4. Just putting that out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, what I've been primarily playing the last few days is Valkyria Revolution. That has been my... Yeah, I've been playing it because, of course, I'm doing it for the review. I'm currently still under embargo until Tuesday. But what I can say right now is I love the story it's telling. But I'm going to have some thoughts about the gameplay.
Okay.
And let's just say some things work, some things don't. It's a serious gamble they're taking here.
Yeah.
And some of it pays off and some of it doesn't. But
yes.
You know, you'll find all that out after Tuesday. Yeah. Once all the reviews start coming in.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, other than that, I have been playing Overwatch. I moved over from Microsoft over to PS4.
Why'd you make that change, out of curiosity?
Because my subscription to
Xbox Live ran out.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't have an Xbox Live subscription, that disc is a coffee coaster. So
basically, yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, that's what I've been up to. So what about you, Dane Reb?
I think he's muted himself.
Again.
Do we need to poke Dan Rub again?
This is terrible. We gotta finally show back up. No, nobody can act like a professional.
Can you hear me?
There you go.
We hear you.
Yeah. Okay, I don't know what happened there. Yeah. All right, so mainly some bloody casual shit. I got back into Overwatch as well. Unfortunately, the event is over, so I missed out on the Sentai skin for Genji. And
you didn't miss anything, man. It was the dupe event.
Okay.
That's all it was.
Yeah, it's the dupe event, yeah.
You wouldn't have gotten it anyway. You would have gotten, like, five of, like, the mace.
No, that's exactly what happened, because I did buy 50 loot boxes, and then I didn't get them. So I was like, okay, great. I didn't get what I wanted after, like, paying for it, so well. Nice. Also been playing some Mario Kart 8, because I've been doing a lot of road trips lately. So, yeah, that's why I need more sleep. I'll talk about E3 later.
Yeah.
So... yeah, that's it. What about you, Chris?
Well, so I talked about on Let's Weekend about trying out Legend of K, and I kind of dipped back into it because I had to see what else was in that game.
Yeah.
I found boar racing, as in, like, pigs.
Pigs, yeah.
That doesn't work too well. There's a weird drifting mechanic with the boars that's... dumb. Just because they don't have controls to begin with.
Did I just hear somebody talk about drifting boars?
Yes. Yeah. So that wasn't fun. I went to the other part of town where I learned wall jumping, which is terrible.
I would have just loved to have sat in on the design meeting where they came up with that.
Yeah. And the wall jump was just terrible. It doesn't feel good at all. They introduce you to these specific, like, wall jump walls, which I could hardly even get on. And as soon as I got up to that, I was like, I don't know how the hell that worked, but I'm not doing that again. So that was fine with me. I went and got this woman her three pumpkins she lost. That was outside where you have to kind of bribe this gorilla with bananas to let you out of the village. And then you fight a boar boss called Borax.
Borax.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to play this game immediately.
It's probably like $2 on Steam, I'm going to guess.
Oh, God.
I got it from that THQ.
I think you just made up Lee's mind for him.
Humble Bundle. So... I bought it for other things, and that was just thrown in there. I was like, I got to try this out anyway.
Yeah.
The boss battle is like your typical charging boss, and you just dodge out of the way at the last minute so he hits the wall.
Yep.
And you get a hit in on this magical amulet. and knock off some health. And eventually runs away. You got your pumpkins, and you're free to go. And that's where I left off. I was like, yeah, this game continues not to be good at all. Somehow on Steam, it has a mostly positive rating. I don't know how what the hell these people are playing.
Because of drifting boars, dude. I think it's pretty obvious.
91 reviews, mostly positive. These people are crazy. I guess they're so desperate for 3D platformers, they have to enjoy this.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Boar drifting, dude. We've been over this.
but yeah, that game, not good at all. I've been playing more Watch Dogs 2, just doing the exploration stuff, looking for the landmarks that are around San Francisco. That's just been fun to do. As I just keep that app up on the one part of the screen. Weirdly, it's like somehow like a good use of like Xbox One Snap, except it's all in game. And so I just sit there and watch the distance from this thing go down as I'm running around. I just run in the middle of traffic and all that. Don't really get hit by anything. They just forgot the crazy black man with the phone sticking out. It's just going after some shit. They stay away from the black man. So, and one thing I really like about that game is just looking at like people's profiles. They give you like some sort of descriptor of them, and if they're an asshole, I take money from them. I wish there was a white hat. So, like, if there's people like, oh, this person's just recently diagnosed with cancer, it's like, oh, let me send them some money or something. I wish you could do that. Otherwise, I've seen people with illegal activities as part of their thing, and I'm going to call the cops on them. send the cops. It's one of the activities you can do. It just sort of forges some fake crime, and the cops go after them. Sometimes they run away from the cops in the process of arresting them, or I just fuck around with the cop car, and I ended up at this point where I sent the cop car running over a cop, ran off, called in another one on that person because they were still walking away. I was like, you're not getting away with this crime, buddy.
This crime that I just made up.
It didn't make it up. It's just I just made up a more serious one for their other crime. The crime was they had doing something illegal, but it wasn't. You can't just call them on that. Yeah. So the other cop car pulls up. The cops put them in. The other cops from the other car came running over, helping them out, then took their car. It's like, we need a cop car. This was our perp. And left the other two cops to fend for themselves. Like, oh, what the hell's going on here?
That sounds about like what you'd expect from SIPD.
Three cops, one car. That was fun to see. That game's just been fun to mess around with and explore the whole city and all that. Another game I've been playing some of is Divinity Original Sin on PS4, and that game is a lot of fun. I'm still early in it. I basically did my video and then just started up a new save to do my own stuff. And it's a game that's great for OCD people because you can look in all like every single crate you come across and pot and all that stuff. And just try and see what's in it and just build up an inventory. Like I have 7 or 8 shells. Just found them on the beach along the way at the very beginning. Like, I don't know what the hell these are for, if they're worth anything, but it lets me pick them up, so I'll pick them. And I'm in the middle of a dungeon right now where I'm just exploring, solving a couple quick puzzles, taking out a couple of enemies, and just searching all these boxes and shit. You also have to do things like move boxes out of the way because there's this like bridge you're on and it's just got a bunch of stuff on it, so you got to move it out of the way, which works pretty well. I think it'd be a bit nice. There's some inventory stuff they could do that make it better, but otherwise it works mostly fine because you control each character separately. So like if you pick something up with the character you're controlling, it's in their inventory.
No.
Even if it's something that should be in the others, and try and switch between them to equip them up takes longer than it probably should.
Yeah.
There's no, like, team inventory mechanic or equip mechanic. Just, like, I should be able to take the other guy and say, okay, these pants should go on him. Just let me put them on. Mm. No, they're not his inventory, so he can't.
Can't have them.
Doesn't have access to them yet.
Give them to him, and then
you have to go into the other person's inventory, say, give this to the other person. Then I can go swap over to them. It's a little bit more cumbersome, but yeah, even if it was a PC game, where it's just like, oh, just switch over easily. Mm. Here, trying to do it on a controller, it doesn't work as well, but it's a minor thing. The game itself is pretty fun. And it has some weird, like, dialogue stuff as well. One of the first things you get in that game is you come across this person that just comes out of a cave, attacks you, raises some dead to attack you. Mm. And you take them out, and you're like, well, we can go to the town we were supposed to go to complete our quest, or we can go and explore what's going on in this dungeon that this person came out of. And I went into the dungeon, because it's like, might as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's a decent bit of content that I could be skipping if I wanted to. It's like, well, I paid for this. I'm going to go in here and see what the hell's going on. But yeah, that's been pretty fun. So that's been pretty much it. How about you, Lee?
Oh, God. Well, I have so far I've been playing the what game do I want to buy and or play game. Because of the Steam sale. It hasn't been as bad as the previous Steam sales, because, like, I'm sure if anybody has been on Steam and seen the sales, it tends to be kind of the same stuff that goes on sale over and over. The one thing that has become incredibly clear to me is that if you are not a AAA game on Steam, you're an indie, you are a Metroidvania. Everything is a Metroidvania that is an indie on Steam. Everything. Like, I was looking at I found a thread on NeoGAF that was like hidden gems from the Steam sale. Every fucking single one of them, Metroidvania. Everyone. So that I've come to the conclusion that that's how that works. But it's been crazy because I've just there's so many games I have on my wish list that I want to play, and I've been actually trying to actively go through and play older games that I have because I don't want to buy anything new until I beat some of the old stuff. And like, I went through Dishonored recently, even though I've owned that since it came out. Like, it's fucked up too, because I have the version on 360, I have the PC, and I think I have the definitive edition on PS4 because I got that during Black Friday, I think, for like $8. It was like ridiculously cheap. I was like, oh, I'll get around to that. Yeah, that really worked out. But no, so I finally got around to it, and I beat it. And the thing that was crazy to me about Dishonored is, you know, I've heard so many people like praising it for years. And it's a good game, no doubt, but like, there's absolutely no incentive to play how they want you to. Like, there's no reason to be stealthy. Like, you need to be like Murder McMurderface, and the game is a lot of fun. But like, there's nothing but problems if you play it like super stealthy. Like, oh, the maid saw you, now what the fuck are you going to do? I guess she's got to die too. So, because like, once somebody discovers you, you can't choke them, or at least I couldn't. Like, you could like choke guards, but anybody else couldn't do it. So, like, I started trying to be, like, I started trying to be, like, all nice and chivalrous and shit. Like, I'm not going to kill anybody. And that went out the window after about 8 minutes when somebody discovered me. And I'm like, wait a minute, I can't disable you? Oh, well, all right, I'm just
going to – I guess you got to go.
Yeah, you're getting knifed. So
– when I was playing that, I felt like the only reason to not kill anybody was to avoid rats. That's how I feel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and there are so one of the things that they end up doing is they do this they do what's called high chaos, where if you like kill a bunch of people, it actually changes how the later part of the game plays. Like, for instance, some of the enemies, like if you have to start going after some targets, like I think starting after like the fifth mission, those targets will actually, because you've been on like, you know, a murder spree because you're Murder McMurderface, they will barricade themselves. Like, and be in different parts of the level. So that part is cool, but it's still not difficult enough, even played on the highest setting, where you're like, okay, well, you know, I still am just going to go easy on these people and stuff like that. And I enjoyed the game. I enjoyed the way it was laid out. I enjoyed the fact that, you know, you could really tackle a lot of things the way that you wanted to. But it still felt awkward in a way to me. So I hope 2 is better. I own 2 as well because I got that during Black Friday, I think, for like $15. See, there's a pattern here. But yeah, so I was like, well, I'm going to move on to my next game. And then I looked, and I have like 216 Steam games. I'm not even sure what to play. And then, you know, the funniest part is you know what went on sale during the Steam sale, which I just think is really fucked up? There's actually a program out there called You Need a Budget. Yeah. And they put that on sale during the Steam sale. So I don't know what the hell that's about. But anyway, so yeah, I've been sort of like, because I want to play something short. And, like, something fun, but I also don't want it to be, like, too dark. Like, Dishonored really kind of got dark, you know, because you're Murder McFurterface. But anyway, so I'm sort of paralyzed with what to play. But other than that, I've been playing Forza 3, doing, like, the Forza-thons, Forza Horizon 3. And, man, that game is so good. That is probably, as far as, like, arcade-style racers, I think besides, like, Ridge Racer and, like, Rage Racer, I think that's probably the most fun I've ever had with the racing game. It's just absurd how much fun it is. The Hot Wheels stuff is fun. Just going through and collecting cars. Like, dude, we got an old, like, we won on one of the wheel spins, like an old, like, GMC, like, 80s van. And we managed to find a skin that made it look like the Mystery Machine. And my son street races in that. Like, it's great. There's so much stuff in that game. It's ridiculous. It's so much fun. So anybody that doesn't have it and likes anything to do with racing should play it. But yeah, so that's been the big thing. I've been like trying to figure out how not to go broke with the Steam sale, which is really easy because I don't have any money right now. So it's not hard. But it's like, you know, it's kind of like one of those things. Like when you see, so like I'll give you an example. Knights Into Dreams is on sale. It's like $1.79. Like, and I liked that game when it came out. It was all right. But it's $1.79, dude.
Hmm.
You know, and, like, that's it's hard, man.
Yeah. So that's how you end up with hundreds of games in your collection saying, well, I'm going to buy something because I don't know what to play.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like you ran out of options or something. So.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to buy it now. Wait till Christmas. Right now.
Exactly. Yeah, it's sort of like, wait till I get some free time. I'll put some work into this.
You know? Yeah. And it's never like, happens.
Nope.
Yeah.
Wait till Christmas and then boom, winter sale.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, as has become apparently clear, the Steam Summer Sale is now live. So if you have money, you can go spend it there. I got an email from Steam when the sale launched saying 75 items on your wish list are on sale.
Mine was 614 games on sale.
Yeah. It's like, well, it's okay. Like your entire wish list is on sale, so yeah, mm-hmm. That'd be a good time to buy it. So yeah, go ahead and check that out and collect stickers. Just
yeah, the sticker thing seems really dumb.
Yeah, it is.
It's totally like, hey, dumb. Go do things, and you can fill these sticker books. And I don't know, you don't get anything really out of that.
Yeah.
We've run out of ideas. Extra card.
Yeah. So, not a whole...
You get a wallpaper of these stickers.
Yeah. Eh. Not a whole lot to say there, but anyway. So, Danrip, you went to E3 and
I did.
Survived.
I did. I don't know how I survived, but I survived.
Yeah, so you have anything to say about the interesting things that happened over there?
All right, so first of all, I went in with a consumer badge, not a press badge, so that was a little bit different.
How stringent were they about that?
It depends on what you're asking here. Like, it wasn't really exhibitors and stuff really being stringent, it was really just the other people, like the industry and the press looking at you in weird ways. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm trying to explain myself because I'm part of the press, but I'm also a consumer. So yeah, the main thing was with a consumer badge, it was put in a yellow piece of plastic. So it's easy to tell who was who over at E3.
There's the yellow people.
Oh, exactly. So it's the yellow-green badgers. And I'm part of this Facebook group called the E3 Party List, so I can find, like, you know, where all the good parties are or whether there was a line in a certain place. And it was actually pretty cool for all the day zero days when E3 hadn't begun yet. Mm. And then once the show actually rolled around, the board got more and more toxic. Like, people were blaming green badges for this, people were blaming them for that, because there were a few thefts there. And, you know, when you open something to the public, that's going to happen. Mm. But then, as we'll find out later in the show, there were actually some thefts made by security itself, because the security was pretty much shit. On day one, for example, the line to get into the convention center was about two streets over, all the way into LA Live, which is the mall next to the convention center. Ooh. And yeah, it was just a huge clusterfuck. So I was like, you know what? I'm not going to deal with this line. I'm going to walk around somewhere else. So I ended up going upstairs into a different concourse, which ended up being a shorter line. So with that in mind, I was like, well, so much for lining up at the West Hall to get to Nintendo first, because yeah, your planning goes out the window. All the planning I had went absolutely to shit, because it was just ridiculous with how long all the lines are, which is to be expected, because obviously it's a convention. It was a clusterfuck to begin with, and you add 15,000 more people, it becomes even more frustrating. As far as making appointments goes, it was about the same thing every year. You get an email, you reply to it, and the only appointment I actually had was with THQ Nordic to check out Elex. Mm-hmm. Which actually ended up being our most viewed preview that I've written over the past week or so. So yeah, that was I guess that was pretty cool. I guess no one wrote about it, and the game's actually looking really good. When I first saw the trailer, I thought it was like a Infamous clone, but it's they're saying it's closer to Witcher 3 than anything else, just because of all the things you can do within that open world. And the thing that got me was the jetpack. I was like, hey man, a jetpack in an open world, this is dangerous right here. And they kept saying, you know, there's going to be no load times. That's even more exciting. So yeah, this game comes out in October. Going back to before E3, the most awesome thing by far was Bethesda's press conference. So I know a lot of people complained about it being late. It was like, what, 9 o'clock? So that's like midnight in the East Coast or whatever. Yes. So I guess the main reason why that happened was because of the thing they had right before, because they opened doors at around 6 o'clock so you can enjoy their booth party or whatever it was. And it was called Bethesda Land, and it was pretty much a take on Disneyland. Like, when I walked in, they were handing me turkey legs, they were handing me cotton candy, they were handing me beer. And here's the thing with the beer. The beer came in steel.
But did anybody get their knife slit or their throat slit like in Dishonored?
Oh, no, unfortunately not.
See, they're not committing. That's bullshit.
And then, they gave beer in their steins, and I was like, hey. So I brought one guy with me. We're going to take as many as possible. So we took home like 15 of those, gave them to all our friends because they weren't able to go. We got shot glasses, stuff like that. Yeah, it was a totally awesome party. And then when they actually got to the press conference part, I was like, oh, cool. Of course it's all just, recorded and whatnot. So it was cool to watch. People went crazy over the VR stuff. People went a little insane over the Link mods in Skyrim. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff to be excited there. Now going back to what happened on the show floor, yeah, there were a lot of lines, but I would say that there were some goods and some bads for it. For one good thing would be the fact that even the smaller booths got attention. So I'd walk around, I'd go to XSEED, and XSEED had lines, but they weren't ridiculously long. So I actually got to play all their games. The funniest one, of course, being the Senran Kagura game, where it was just a water gun game where you just shoot a bunch of waifus, and it was pretty cool. I didn't write a preview on it because I figured the game's coming out soon. Why bother?
It's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah. And,
you know what you're getting with the Senran Kagura series.
You know exactly what you're getting, but the people who were watching me, they were like, what the hell? This game is totally nuts. Like, when you had to reload your gun, they were doing some pump action with the water guns that looked like they were jacking off somebody. It's totally awesome. Just awesome stuff. But then with the bigger boots, the problem there is that it was probably impossible to play your game. One of the games I really wanted to try that I didn't get to try was Ni No Kuni 2, because that line was absolutely just not worth standing in. Even when I wanted to stand in, they wouldn't let me do it. And then it hurt me even more because I found out that at the end of the conference, after you've played the game, they give you a ticket to get a steelbook for the game. And I was like, I'm a steelbook collector. This is totally fucked up. But yeah. Also, on the floor, they have a section for both people who have appointments and the general public. I feel like it didn't really matter where you stood in. One of the longer booths I stood in was the Lego Marvel game. And since it didn't really matter whether you were press or not, people would just come in, stand in line. And then if you were press, you would just go to the front and say say you're press and go ahead and go in. And that that caused a lot of dirty looks. And I was like, it's understandable. But at the same time, they should have had more closed door sessions. It's the first year they're doing this, so I honestly wouldn't be surprised if A, they either stopped doing this, or two, they made it a whole lot better for the consumers in general. Maybe, I don't know, have the floor open for the press on certain days and the public on certain days, or whether they just have limited hours, or whether they actually rent more rooms and have more closed door sessions. Because with the way it currently is, there is no way that people are going to be able to survive every year. I mean, I know we were joking around about me surviving, but I honestly would not have been surprised if someone died because the security was such shit. They didn't even bother checking IDs. They only checked IDs for registration, but other than that, no. It was like, oh, make sure your badge was flipped the right way. But I'm pretty sure I could have just put any piece of paper in front of me and just said, oh, it was a badge, because they didn't really look at that in general. If they want to go to a more of a PAX format, that's fine. But other than that, this is not something I would pay to get into again. The only way I would go again is if Bethesda invited me to their press conference again.
I think the obvious solution to that is to just have the press there on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then the general public Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Public can make a weekend of it.
Especially with the arms race to have their press conferences first and whatnot. Like, this year we started on Saturday, which is totally ridiculous.
Yeah, schedule creep is something I complained about on a recent show as well.
Hey, Danner, did you get to see the Nyko booth?
Yes. So the Nyko booth was actually a ball pit. And I was like, whoa, this is a ball pit. This is totally not going to be safe. But, instead of finding me in there, there was actually, like, controllers and other stuff like that.
It's like all the fun of the ball pit where kids piss and shit in there, mixed with sweaty nerds from a convention.
Sweaty nerds. Probably also pissed and shit in there.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know.
That's the booth you want to stay far away from if you don't want convention illnesses.
That was actually one of the crazier ones on the last day and the last hour, because they were just handing things out like candy.
As long as it wasn't in the
naturally
ball, take whatever.
Just take it. Yeah.
Probably safer to burn it.
But overall, it seems like E3 is going through some growing pains, I think, opening up to the public. They don't have their process down yet, obviously.
No, they obviously weren't ready. I mean, they even announced it at a time where I was like, wait, shouldn't people be finalizing their appointments now? Why would you announce this at this time?
So,
because that's why.
I've always maintained that E3 is the event that every gamer wants to go to until they get to go to it. And this just seems to be exacerbating that problem. That being said, I do also maintain
For what it was, it was fine, but $250, no.
Yeah, well, if you're going for the appointments and to actually get your hands on games, don't do it. It's all about, and I think there are a lot of events like this, it's about just making connections and hanging out with friends you might otherwise never get to see. After hours stuff or just whatever you might do during taking breaks from the show floor. That's what E3 has become about. And if you want it to, if you want it to remain a good experience, focus on that.
I think the other thing,
the show floor has gone to shit.
Well, I think there's that, and I think the fact that, like, Danner, what you were talking about is, I used to do private security. Private security is not cheap, and I seriously doubt these guys want to spring for that. You know, because you can get away with that at like a press event because people are there working. If somebody acts out and that shit gets reported, they can lose their jobs. But, you know, having, you know, so-and-so from the fucking street there to just, you know, I'm going to play these fucking games, dog. You know, like that's a different thing. And those people come with a different set of expectations and, frankly, a different set of behaviors. And so, you know, what did you say? It was 15,000 extra people?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a lot of fucking security.
Totally. And
I seriously doubt they want to spring for that. So part of me feels like they were doing it because the big thing, too, that you see right now is people are like, is E3 still relevant because of, you know, companies like Nintendo that do directs? And then, you know, you had Sony saying they held back stuff from E3. I think E3 is still going to be relevant as long as it's around. But I think with a lot of these companies wanting to do their own show with, you know, with as big as shit is getting or doing it. I mean, fuck. I mean, you guys remember Space World and the arcade expos and everything else. I mean, all that shit's gone away. Yeah. It's really just kind of like E3 packs and then, you know, smaller stuff. So I think this is part of the – who is it? Who does E3 now? The ESA?
ESA, yeah.
Yeah, and this is definitely part of them trying to keep money going because I'm sure the other thing too is I'm sure all these companies are squeezing them out. Like, you want to charge us this much for this? Fuck you. We can just do it on the internet. Yeah. And if their response back is, no, you can't, they'll be like, well, Nintendo does. Well, shit. You know, then, you know, that becomes a – shit, they're right, you know. So I think that's part of it too. But, yeah, I would not be surprised if they continue it if it's worse next year because I guarantee you they don't want to pay for that security because security is not cheap.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading somewhere that the ESA was trying to make every other developer, like, pay for their own security. First of all, it's already expensive to display your stuff at E3. Second of all, security is a totally another super high expense. So, right. Yeah, it really depends on what they really want to do. And the main thing is there is no way you can go into E3 and profit off of it. The only way you can do that is by, you know, Wall Street. But that's a totally different thing.
Yeah. Well, and then not just that. It's you know, it used to be E3 was where people went when we didn't have the fucking internet. And now everything is there. I mean, you have all these people that are live blogging and everything. I mean, this stuff, everything that's there gets around really, really quickly. So, mm-hmm. So the presence matters definitely, but even now, I mean, I think you can also see the shift with, like, and we're going to talk about Sony and being stupid in a minute, but even with, like, the indie showcases and stuff like that, that used to happen at E3, that shit's not happening anymore. It seems to be kind of moving more back to, let's just shove this AAA shit down people's throats. And we can find that anywhere. So, you know, I think that's the other part of this equation where people are talking about the relevancy of E3 because are they really showing you something that you're not going to be able to see 8 million other places? Like that, like to your point a few minutes ago, Danrev, that article that you wrote, well, if nobody else wrote about it, that's exactly why you should go there and you should do those things. But, but, you know, it seems like everybody, especially this year, I felt like everybody was really trying to front and center, like, just AAA bullshit. And you can find that anywhere. There's no need to go to a conference for that.
Yeah. So, all right. So we'll move on from that. So we got some Blizzard news. The long-awaited Necromancer expansion to Diablo 3 is coming out the 27th of June for $15, which seems a little high for a character, but...
Mm-hmm. They're also throwing in other stuff like,
yeah, it's got some other items and stuff
like
in there
the
too.
Profile stuff, banners, two extra character slots. Like, that's not really all that useful, really.
No, I don't know why you should have to pay for character slots, honestly. But okay, I'm still gonna buy it.
At least it's not a loot box.
Which brings us to
too soon.
Well, that's a good way to get us into the next story, which means Blizzard is going to make some changes to Overwatch's loot boxes.
I love how they made these changes after the fucking event. Like, we already got some money.
When you actually want some.
Yeah.
So what are they doing?
Well, so I think I told you guys this on a couple of shows ago when the Overwatch thing started. So I want to support Blizzard with this. Like, I feel like Overwatch is definitely worth the $60 or however much you can get it for, and I want to maintain support for a game that I have thoroughly enjoyed. I've been able to enjoy with my family. Like, my wife will even play Overwatch, like, which is fucking insane to me. So, like, I want to support these guys. And so, like, you know, the main way to do that is obviously through loot boxes. Well, I did just like Danrab. I spent, like, I think it was, like, a couple weeks ago, I spent, like, $40, which was really stupid because I'm fucking broke. But I spent, like, $40 on, like, 50 loot boxes. And out of the – and I don't play that often, just for the record. But out of the – and I don't buy anything. This is really like kind of like the first time. Out of the 200 items I got from the loot boxes, I want to say 75 were unique. The other 125, I had it written down. The other 125 were duplicates. And so the dupes, like for anybody that doesn't know, like for a duplicate skin, you get like 200 coins, even though those things cost 3,000. And then for everything else, it's like between 5 and 15 coins per. And there's no mechanism to stop you from getting the same thing over and over. Like during the event, I got that Tracer skin 4 times. I got the Mei skin 3 times. I got the soldier 76 skin twice. And I got the Genji skin, Hanzo 3 times. So I was in the same boat as you, Danner. I didn't get what I wanted, which was the Genji skin. And what's the chick with the mech? I can't remember her name.
Diva.
Yeah, I wanted to get the Diva skin, like the little 1950s cruiser. I thought that was badass. And, you know, so what's ended up happening is everybody bitched at Jeff Kaplan. And Jeff Kaplan, for anybody that doesn't know, he goes by, I think his name is still Tiggle Bitties. He was actually the lead player on Vanilla World of Warcraft. And he came out and just basically said, yeah, we're going to do something to really kind of stop these dupes because we know it's bad. And they said they're going to increase the currency drop if you do get a duplicate, which they should have done this a long time ago. And I guess the reason that they didn't, like I think Blizzard's a smart company, and I do think they care about their fans. But at the same time, if people are willingly handing you money in sort of like a gambling manner – I think a lot of companies are really hesitant to cut that off. And I think Blizzard finally said, okay, we need to do this because people are going to flat out stop buying. Like if you looked at the forums, just of course, you know, the forums are where everyone bitches about everything. But there was something like, I want to say like 300 page threads where people are like, I'm done. I want to support you. I have no other mechanism to do so. So I'm not going to because it's bullshit for me to spend real money, not even have a chance to get what I want because you guys keep sending me the same bullshit over and over again. So they're changing it, but not before the event was over. It was a shitty event too.
Do we have numbers as to what the increase is as far as the dupe currency goes?
No, I haven't seen any unless you guys have.
No, it says the changes are live on the public test realm on PC.
Yeah,
so we'd have to have somebody go over there.
A lot of good that does me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because honestly, like for me, the bare minimum is for them to just raise the currency amount. Because you know, I'm like, I'm okay with spending the 3,000, but here's the thing: I don't have the 3,000, and we can't buy currency either.
Well, yeah. And it's bullshit that a skin costs 3,000, like an epic skin costs 3,000, but then when you get a duplicate of an epic skin, you get 200 coins.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Like that's insane, and I get the feeling like I definitely think they knew this for a long time, but. Everybody was just enamored with it. But frankly, the other thing I think that's happening too with Overwatch is that the player base, since the game is older now, needs incentive to log in to do this stuff. And the main incentive previously was getting skins and getting new dances and shit like that. But when it's so difficult – oh, that's the other thing. They made all of the skins legendary quality, whereas before you could get them as epic quality, which means you had a higher chance of getting them.
Yeah.
So that was the other thing they did. They introduced a whole bunch of items during this event, and they made all the ones that people would want. Like I was reading when they set it to China, like the drop rate for a legendary item was like 1 in every 25 boxes, like 25.6. And the drop rate for a epic item, which is purple, I think it was like 1 in every 11. So like when you just do the math like that, I mean it's gambling. That's all it really is. It's a fucking slot machine. And so, you know, hopefully they'll change that. But I don't think this is going to be the end of it. I think people won't be happy with what they do. Like, I think if you get an epic skin, like if you get a dupe, you should be getting at least 1,500 coins for it. So if you get that same one again, then you can actually buy what you want.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
just sell off two of them and you got, you know.
Yeah.
Either that, or if you're going to do that, then allow people to gift those kinds of skins to their friends and let their friends be able to give them.
Yes.
You know.
Reach.
Like, so. that's what they should definitely do. Because then, I mean, then, now, of course, you'd be introducing an auction house into the game, and then people would probably say, well, no, you guys are the auction house, so you're going to make shit even more rare. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, like, it would have been super cool to be able to give my wife some of those skins. It would have been cool to be able to give my kids some of those skins, as opposed to just getting a paltry amount of coins for them that I can't use to get anything with anyway, because I need to have spent $400 to get 6,000 coins or whatever. It's fucking retarded. So,
yeah. I mean, like, I work for a developer that, you know, uses gacha mechanics as its main source of revenue. But with Overwatch, the fact that you can get these boxes without even actually spending anything means a whole lot. So, honestly, they wouldn't even be losing anything by making this sort of decision.
So. You know, it's bad if a gacha developer might be like, that's scummy. you guys need to do better.
So, all right. In news that should probably surprise nobody, last year we had the release of Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, which came, well, shackled with Call of Duty Modern Warfare Remastered.
Mm-hmm. One of the big dick moves there.
Yeah, the big dick
moves. Wait, was it the other way around?
Yeah, it was the other way around.
Yeah.
Modern Warfare Remastered was shackled, too.
People
could have
bought Modern Warfare Remastered by themselves, they'd have been hella happy.
Yeah. Well, now they can, because next week it's coming out, standalone.
$40
$40
Not even with the other map pack too. So that's another $50
Yeah, it doesn't come with the map pack. It's fucking stupid.
Because
so it's
Activision.
It's a $55 game if you want the full game.
Oh my god.
So
yeah. So this is how Activision is making up for the bottom line.
Activision's over there like, give me the loot, give me the loot.
And people are gonna buy it because
They are.
Well, for the people who didn't, who you know, managed to have enough willpower not to buy Infinite Warfare, they're going to make money off of that. And then also, I should point out, Modern Warfare Remastered now has microtransactions.
Of course it does.
Because of course it does.
It has the weapon crates that the last few Call of Duty games have added.
Yeah, it also has crafting for some reason.
What?
Yeah, it has crafting. I don't know
you
why.
You make your own fucking bullets?
Your own guns. But
I get you craft duplicates into whatever materials that you can put towards new weapons.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or some spicy steaks that'll allow you to survive in the snow.
Probably not.
Seriously, that's what I'm wondering, if that's how it works.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a thing, and it'll be available next week. If you care for that, go ahead and buy it. We got news from Bungie. They've revealed what the first reward is for Destiny veterans going into Destiny 2. Sure, Chris will want to chime in on this one.
Yeah, so this is concerning emblems that you'll be able to get for Destiny 2. That's sort of our signs of what you did in the first game. So they have 7 of them here. These are for like completing a moment of triumph for the first year, all of the moments of triumph from the first year, stuff from the second year, and from the current Age of Triumph that will, and I think one for getting a Grimoire score of over 5,000, which I have no idea what I have. I might have to look into that. I got a couple of these, I think. But yeah, these emblems are just kind of like the avatars that you have in games, sort of like what you have on, I assume, like Street Fighter and various other multiplayer focused games where you have like that little badge sort of thing. That's what that is, basically. So this is sort of the first of the rewards they're revealing that are that veteran Destiny players will get for playing Destiny, going into Destiny 2.
And these don't have stat boosts associated with them, do they? No.
It's just purely like a
cosmetic.
Say, hey, I played Destiny 1. Fucking bow for me. I don't know.
Fair enough.
And along with this, they also revealed some of their final live game seasonal content that's going to be going up to the game's launch. Things like Trials of Osiris, which is sort of their seasonal co-op events, and the Iron Banner, which is sort of their multiplayer one. They're doing Iron Banner on July 4th. The last one's on August 1st. Trials of Osiris is, I guess they're doing it every weekend up till then, up till August 11th. Various raids are getting featured in between there, and some of that stuff with special awards and all that. And then that stuff will be going away, essentially, as they transition to Destiny 2.
Basically, they want people to, you know, move over to Destiny 2, it seems. Like, they don't seem to... I don't think they're going to keep supporting Destiny 1 at this point. They'll just probably keep it running for a while and then shut it down.
They'll probably keep it going for quite a while.
Yeah.
Just not having any of these extra things that requires more manpower.
Yeah. It'll just be maintenance.
Yeah. And I guess also the PlayStation exclusive items and strikes and such will finally be available on Xbox One in October.
Mm-hmm.
So...
same time as when the PC launches.
Yeah. And so after Destiny 2 launches, you can finally enjoy all the other content for Destiny 1.
For Destiny 1, yeah. So, okay. All right.
Anybody ever just feel like Bungie doesn't have a fucking clue?
Well, I get the sense that Destiny 1, they didn't have a fucking clue. And
now they do. They know what people want and what they want to do, and they're trying to make that stuff as good as possible.
Yeah. Now, they're apparently, like, teaming up with... well, not teaming up, but, I mean, bouncing things off of Blizzard as far as multiplayer things go for Destiny 2, so...
yeah.
I would have loved him in a fly on the wall for this conversation. You want to do what?
That's not how that works.
Yeah.
Is that one developer recoils and horn? No! No!
Honestly, I'm just waiting until Anthem comes out.
that game does look good. Scripted
year and a half
Mike
away.
Chatter. Yeah, aside.
I like how nonchalant that one guy is when he launched in on the trailer. Hey guys, so ready to go kill some shit? Man.
Nobody talks like that in a multiplayer game.
No,
that just doesn't happen. So,
doesn't.
Anyways. So in what is looking to be a very crowded day, August 29th has another pretty big release coming. The console port of the fantastic Pillars of Eternity is coming to PS4 and Xbox One on that day. Yeah, buy it. It's good.
Yeah, includes all the DLC and expansion packs. So that looks like it's going to be pretty cool.
Yep, August 29th. And the rooster.
Did I just hear a rooster? What the fuck was that?
I've been hearing a rooster all show. What the hell?
Somebody's phone is a barn.
Oh, no, my dad owns a rooster. It's in their front yard.
Okay, so
that's amazing.
That's awesome.
That, for some reason, makes all the sense in the world.
if there was anyone that I thought there was going to be a rooster coming from, it was not Dan Reb's mic. I'm not going to lie. I was totally unexpected.
Yeah. I thought it was like a notification thing.
Yeah.
Like, text message.
Yeah.
Someone just picks the most annoying one possible.
just letting you know. Rick, Phil, I think you found its title.
Exactly. Yep. Was that a rooster?
The rooster frills. All
right. Yeah, what the cock says.
Why don't we ask him what he thinks about what Bungie's doing?
Let's see, what else have we got here? Oh, apparently a nearly lost Homeworld game was found and now being sold on GOG.
Yeah, so this was Homeworld Cataclysm. That was the third Homeworld game.
It's supposed to be the third,
Yeah, and they thought they had lost the original code.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Gearbox even almost gave up on finding it, and eventually they did. So now it's been renamed Homeworld Emergence because I guess Blizzard owns the term Cataclysm.
The rooster was not a fan of that.
No.
And so now it's released on GOG and available for people to check out.
Yeah. So they found it, finished it up, and put it out. That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know somebody who's going to be very, very interested
in that. 10% off at launch, so $9. Yeah.
$9. For a Homeworld game nobody's ever played.
So I'm not buying it unless it's 75% off, and I can purchase it with acorns.
Okay.
Is that a Steam currency yet?
No, but I think Steam does take Bitcoin. Not sure. I think I saw that as a purchase option at some point. So I think we talked about this, or I mentioned this at one point in passing over the past few weeks, that Sega was going to be doing a mobile service called Sega Forever, which would be...
Ambitious.
Yeah, an ad-supported, free-to-play thing with their classic games. That's launched on iOS and Android. It's launched with 5 games so far.
Does it suck?
I don't know. Depends on how you feel about Altered Beast, Comic Zone, Kid Chameleon, Phantasy Star 2, and so on.
How the fuck do you play something like Kid Chameleon without a controller?
Ads in the middle.
Well, we'll have ads.
Put
there.
On this helmet and go ahead and buy some Insight.
Well, it doesn't have microtransactions, to be fair. At least there's that.
You can pay $2 to essentially unlock it. Yeah.
I was reading the folks from Retronauts kind of like disassembled those games, and one of the biggest complaints was the frame rate.
Yes, that's a lot of people are complaining about that. So
yeah, because they're like, aren't they like most of the games that were 60 FPS and that? Because you know that was one thing. Genesis didn't do well. I don't want to say they didn't do a lot of things right. It's what Sega didn't, but the Genesis games were, for the most part, were always fast paced, and they were always pretty smooth. Like they took that blast processing shit for real, even though it wasn't a real thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was curious because I was reading like apparently Sonic plays great, and Sonic is faithful, but the rest aren't.
Yeah, I think emulation issues are to blame in this case. But yeah.
I think Sonic was already on mobile, so I'm guessing they probably didn't do too much to that.
Yeah, I think they just took that port and just stuck it in there.
Yeah.
Because these are, I think these are all separate apps. There's no like.
Yeah, that was hub. The weird thing. I was like, there's no Sega Forever app
that
you can get this stuff from. I just searched Sega Forever on the Android store, and it's like, well, here's these 5 games. Like, is that it?
Yeah.
That is a Nintendo move if I've ever heard one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, keeping it old school like that.
Yeah. Use the search button. Jeez. So that's out. Whether it will improve over the next few months, we don't know. Whether it will come to consoles, we don't know, but don't hold your breath.
Yeah. I would imagine PC probably, like Steam.
Yeah,
would be
Steam
a good place.
Probably show up there.
Which their Twitter account is kind of hinting at Dreamcast, Saturn, and Master System games as well.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by that because Saturn emulation is one of those weird things. So yeah. if they get that pulled off, I think that'll be really cool. Of course, you know, it could just be shit. We'll see.
I'd be wondering if it's just the ports of the current Saturn stuff they've emulated on PSN and XBLA, or if it's anything new beyond that.
We'll have to
wait
and see.
I do like that they have offline support.
Yeah,
so you can actually play it offline, so you don't have to use up data or anything like that, which is great for me.
Yeah. Well, if you've downloaded the app, it's not like it's really needs to connect online to do anything. It's just...
Yeah, but there are plenty of mobile games that tell you to fuck off if you're trying to play offline.
Yeah, like Super Mario Run.
Yeah. You don't need me to be online for this game.
Yeah.
It's just a fucking runner.
Yeah. So, all right. So, in other things that are pretty cool, NHL 18 is getting a threes arcade mode. 3-on-3.
Yeah, that'll be cool. We've been wanting for arcade hockey for quite some time now, so...
Do you get the sense that Rammer's team really wants to do an arcade-style game and sticking it inside NHL 18 is the only way that they can right now?
Probably.
Yeah.
It wouldn't really surprise me.
Yeah. Given EA is their somewhat anti... well, like you said, kind of implied that Rammer's team is kind of the black sheep of the EA family.
Yeah, they're always the last to get the new tech. They never get, you know, front and center treatment whenever they're pushing all their sports franchises.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, it's got like
they just
special...
seem like they're treated like something that is other.
Mm.
And even though it's one of the best teams they've got.
Yeah.
And it says here they got like special commentary and broadcast stuff for this. New arenas, special rules and all that.
Yeah.
Like penalties send you straight to center ice for a penalty shot and the chance to earn a crucial goal.
Hmm.
So you just fucking take a penalty shot with any, fouls or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
They got 3-on-3 online play. So you can do like team play or just 1-on-1. So just control the whole team.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. For this like weird side mode.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like a rather fleshed out side mode, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Hopefully it leads to standalone game development. They, you know, EA could always activate Turmel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I saw that this kind of came out of the new overtime rules. They're 3-on-3, so they had to develop new AI and all that to be able to handle just being three players on each side. So that kind of fed into this mode.
Not.
Yeah. So if they're going to do that anyway, you might as well just make a whole side mode out of it. So
yeah,
that's pretty cool. So moving on, another news. The Switch 3.0 firmware update is out, and it makes some nice quality of life improvements.
Mm-hmm.
You can find your Joy-Cons if you lose them now. So that's
it just has them vibrate.
Yeah, just makes them vibrate.
Hopefully you can actually
hear
that.
It's HD rumble, guys. Okay. it's clinking ice in a glass.
HD rumble.
Yeah, it will HD rumble all over your living room, so you can figure out where it is.
Yeah. Let's see, what else they added?
Just make
like,
them bitches fucking make noise. Jesus.
Yeah,
it'd be great if your Joy-Con beeped at you.
It doesn't have a speaker, does it?
Yeah,
no.
It does. No. One of them. I don't know.
And then it fucks with you. Like, well, you found one of them. Have fun.
Yeah.
Yep.
They have, like, specific news channels for certain games.
Yeah.
You can add friends that were on your 3DS or Wii U friends list.
See, that's one of the features that kind of went glanced over by a lot of people, but that says a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're actually coming around in 2007. I'm really surprised.
Well, but they're only, so now they're only 10 years behind, so okay. At least they're getting there.
Yeah. They have notifications for when friends come online.
Oh!
Guys, this isn't shit they should be complimented on. It's like it says so much that you guys are like, oh, that's amazing.
Like, well, I'm not saying it's amazing. I'm just saying they have it.
It's because it's Nintendo. Like, oh, this reminds me of like when you have a fucking 2-year-old and he doesn't shit all over himself. You're like, I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, because okay. I think the only way you knew that before is there's that blue dot on your user icon.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, something happened. I don't know what it is, but I gotta go figure it out.
Yeah.
And it's new avatars for Splatoon 2 to your user icon options. Let's see. You can access system volume, so you can make it go higher for if you're using the headphones.
Mm.
It's like that kind of phone style system there.
Jesus.
And you can update controllers now.
I don't know how this doesn't get anybody rock hard. I mean, really.
Oh, controller firmware updates.
Mm. Yeah. Which I plugged mine in, and it's like, there's no update. Like, okay, that's good.
You can do it now, at least.
Yeah.
The funny part is Nintendo does these kinds of patch notes so crazily that there are people out there like, I can update my controllers now. This is incredible.
There aren't any updates available, but you can do it.
Yeah. I think they also
What does this mean?
Yeah. I think they also fixed the weird HDMI switching issues that some people have had.
Yeah. I've actually had that, which I was actually kind of happy they did that. But, you know, I don't ever. My Switch isn't really turned on anyway, so.
All I can say is.
Let's not forget the most important update, guys. No. We get to select from 6 new Splatoon characters for your icon.
I feel like that's really important.
Say that, but that is important.
I just use KK Slayer. It's the best one there.
I'm still using the R-Wing.
Yeah.
Fuck the R-Wing.
I think I got Samus.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it just goes to show you.
I'm overwhelmed with the variety, though, that you guys are talking about. Those six Splatoon characters are really going to make my avatar pop.
Yeah, it just shows how unfinished the Switch was when it launched, that this is a significant update, you know?
Does anybody ever get, like, the sense that Nintendo had just had no fucking idea? Like, even with them, like, selling as many of them as they do, like, they have been completely caught by surprise on this shit. Like, we didn't think it was going to do this well either. Fuck, what are we going to do now? We actually got to fucking fix this online shit. Like, we got to, like, okay, let's give them avatars.
Like, I think they've actually said as much. They were completely unprepared for the Switch being as successful as it was.
Like, they were like, well, we had all these low expectations. We thought it could just be the Wii U 2, and people actually like it. So we got to do something now. Fuck.
Yeah. Let's discontinue it next year. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, let's do that. But anyways. So in shitty Nintendo news, the NBA Playground developers apparently have been blocked from updating the game because of Switch patch rules.
Wait, what?
Yeah, so the developers have been wanting to put in a bunch of fixes. One of them is they had to take out the online multiplayer before launch just because they couldn't get it ready to go in time. And that's been mostly ready, but they've been fighting with Nintendo over their policies. Essentially, they said, fortunately, there isn't much update I can provide. There are certain elements of our patch that are absolutely essential that are out of normal Nintendo guidelines. If Nintendo were to approve the patch, it would be released immediately, but we are in the midst of a long process of back and forth to get small matters waived. It isn't that we aren't working on this. In fact, getting this relatively simple patch out has consumed more of our time than making further improvements in additions to the game. When I say is entirely out of our hands, I mean that we were put in a position that where we need to get this game out at the same time as the other consoles, and because the platform is so new, suffered in certain areas. This isn't even a change log at this point. It's the same patch that's been sitting there for weeks. The simplest one is patch size. There are certain size requirements that you can't exceed in a patch. It took us almost 3 weeks to get an exception to allow our patch to be larger than the normal size. The reason it's larger is due to the technology we were using and beyond our control. In fact, we proposed reducing the entire file size of the game from 7 gigs to 3.5 gigs, but because the platform is so new, it doesn't support that now, and that can't be done.
Wow.
I feel like the rooster. I'm very upset about this.
This is
once again. I can understand your competitors do this shit for the last 10 years. How do you not have a fucking slight plan on how to handle this shit?
Yeah,
how?
And I mean, I can understand in some regard that there would be size limitations, given that, you know, pretty much every Switch only has 32 gigs to work with.
Yeah,
but at the same time, you've got Breath of the Wild sitting there at 15 gigs and. Dragon Quest Builders at like 30, Dragon Heroes rather.
Yeah,
I think you should probably just waive that whole thing and just let things be as big as they can, you know, as they need to be.
Yeah,
if something is too big, it's there. It's big because it has to be, not because they're trying to make it enormous.
Yeah,
this isn't like Gears or Halo, where it's like half on the disc, half. Update.
Yeah.
Where you're wondering, where the hell's all this space going?
Yeah.
We always come back to this when we talk about the Switch and these discussions, is just that there's something monstrously wrong with Nintendo that they are so asleep at the wheel on basic shit that's been basic for 10 fucking years. Like, and even if they weren't looking at their competition, okay, fine. Look at the PC. You know, There's a way to do this, man.
Yeah. Like, there are many ways to do this. It's just... Nintendo doesn't seem to have that technical knowledge, apparently.
Nintendo strikes me as like those politicians that don't know how the fucking internet works. Yeah. You know? But they want to write policy on, like, how the internet should work. Like, well, mm-hmm. you don't even know how to fucking order a burrito from Chipotle, so maybe you shouldn't be talking about this. Like, mm-hmm. Nintendo's the same way. Like, if you're going to put out a system where people can patch shit and then you want to fucking tell them that they can't because of these fucking arbitrary made-up rules, like, we're still dealing with fucking Nintendo fucking GBA cartridges, like... I fucking hate this company sometimes. I swear to God.
Yeah, it seems like this comes out of wanting to preserve the size, the hard drive size, like try to prevent anybody from deliberately pushing you into a need to actually go buy an SD card, but they should just be encouraging that anyway.
Because that just solves that one big issue. Is not enough anyway.
Yeah, because that was like last gen when XBLA, or just Xbox Live in general, their updates were limited to 4 megabytes.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
they had the non-hard drive SKU.
Yeah.
And so they forced everybody under these rules when it just hurt everybody.
Yeah.
And the consumers, because then you had like Burnout Paradise, had to release those updates as DLC.
Hmm.
Yeah. Then you had to rely on people to go find that DLC just so they can have the features that the other platforms got easily, just because they said, if that's what it's going to be, just do it.
Right. Yeah. But Microsoft was also smart about it. Like, they eventually raised the cap. Like, I remember there was a big deal with like Symphony of the Night and some other yep. stuff as well, where they were like, this is bigger than anything that we've put on there. Like, they seem to have the idea, like, okay, we know this platform is going to evolve. Nintendo doesn't ever seem to approach that shit at all. And I do understand your point, Chris. Like, you definitely don't want to have like somebody putting out like a 32 gig patch, you know. But at the same time, like, this is Nintendo specifically gimped the hardware's memory to save money. So I don't know that that should be the developer's problems, particularly. And I'm sure somebody can come back and go, well, then they shouldn't release something fucked up. Like, okay, well, yeah, that would be great, but that's not the world we live in.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, developers do this stuff all the time, unfortunately. And frankly, with as complex as games get, I mean, there's a lot more stuff out there now that could go wrong with your game that developers may not even run into during Q&A. Like, that's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's just one of those weird things. Like, the Wii U, I don't think had any issues with this, though they put everything in blocks, so it was kind of hard to tell. Yeah. They obscured it as much as they could, so like I can go to my Wii U home screen and look at like it downloads, and it's like, you got these updates to install, and it's like, okay, I don't know what these things did, I don't know how big they are, I don't know anything about this.
But it's 3,200 blocks, baby!
I don't know what that is, but okay.
Sounds good!
Yeah. So...
So just trust your consumers are smart enough to know that if they run out of space, they can go buy some more storage for it.
Well, especially when micro SD storage is so cheap. We're not talking about a situation where they got to go break the bank.
Yeah.
We're not talking about $100 memory sticks here. A 64 gig micro SD card will run you like $28. It's not going to break the bank. So, anyways, we got an anniversary coming up on July 5th, Rocket League, the, I think, surprising indie sensation, is going to be doing their really big anniversary update.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a great update that's coming out on July 5th. The big thing it adds is a new arena called Champions Field. It looks like a really huge field. Has like a replica of the RLCS trophy
mm-hmm.
that they gave out a couple weeks ago on the side. Just like this big sort of soccer stadium surrounding this field. That just looks really cool. But along with that, they also added a number of other things. Obviously like new trophies and achievements, which is pretty cool. Along with that, they added more customization stuff. So along with all the other normal stuff that drops, things like the trails on the car, like when you go into boost mode, if you've seen like the Back to the Future car, like the fire trail that's left behind,
that's
the thing that gets customized.
How do you get that?
It drops after matches.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I think part of – they're going to be ending their – season 4 competitive stuff with this update, and I think that will be one of the things you can earn based on how well you ranked in the competitive stuff. Along with that, the explosions and the goals, that's also going to be another thing you can earn customizations for. They show off a few of them in here. Along with that, there's also the engine sounds. That's going to be also customizable with drops. So a lot more of these customization stuff is coming in, and that's going to be pretty cool to see sort of what weird things they add to that.
All of this is just soccer with cars, man. It blows my mind.
Yeah,
what a great idea.
And along with that, they're also adding Rocket League Radio, which is they're adding a whole new soundtrack to the game called, I think, Monster Cat, Rocket League Cross Monster Cat. That's going to be a bunch more, like 18 more songs added to it. And so with that, they'll just have this radio thing, like you can set up playlists of songs. So you can use like the original soundtrack, the one they added, I think, a year ago, or this new one, or there's some like unreleased stuff they've added as well. So you can just customize all of that. They're adding new crates to the game that has two new cars in it that you can get. Let's see, what else is there? I think that's mostly it.
It's still a pretty big update.
Yeah, it's a bunch of stuff, and that's going to be out in about another week or so. And that's going to be a great update to get back into the game with.
Yeah. So, very cool stuff. So, we got fighting game news. Capcom and Bandai Namco have a cross-licensing deal going for matchmaking technology. I'm guessing this is Capcom licensing their tech to Namco Bandai because they kind of need it. yeah, Capcom's already gone through the fire on that one, so makes sense that you know, they might want to license that tech out.
There's a lot more to it than that. Now, some people are going wild with this talk and saying that it's basically the two companies getting together to form a fighting super studio, and no, that's not happening. But basically, it seems as though whenever they're about to roll out a new fighting game on either side, their web guys are going to come together and you know, provide everything that they can to make the online experiences smooth and, you know, of high quality as possible. Honestly, I would say that this is really about CFN.
Man, more specifically, I think this is more about making CFN a little less about the C and more about FN.
Yep. Well, that is by design now. And I'm sure that this will eventually end up in Tekken 7. And, but, you know, the struggles that these two companies have had do not match up. So it makes sense to have them teaming up and filling in the gaps that that each one has been struggling with. And it's also going to sort of lubricate the licensing process for any sort of cross promotion they want to do. So future tech and future Tekken appearances by Akuma will now be easier to make happen, and things like that. But it's not a merger by any stretch. But it is. If you're a fighting gamer, this is something that you should be excited about all the same.
Yeah, I mean, this is what we want to see. Instead of every single fighting game being siloed, now we're. We have the possibility that it could all be under one network, and that's good for everybody. If you want to, you know, bring more people into your game, it's good that whatever game they're playing, they can know that your game exists. You know, if you see your friends playing something, it's like, oh, maybe I want to play this game.
What is the one CFN characteristic that's kind of unique in the fighting genre right now? It's cross-platform.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. PC and PS4.
Yep. That means something.
Yeah. I think they're the only ones that have done it right now.
And if Bandai Namco is saying, hey, this is what we want to build around...
Ooh, then there's the possibility that we might get, you know, cross-platform play on the PC and PS4 versions of Tekken 7 and games going forward.
And it could be severe leverage against Microsoft and their kind of isolationist approach to things.
Yeah.
If you start to have these studios banding together and saying, hey, this is a good thing, this is what we're going to build around. Because the infrastructure is already in place, and we don't really have to ask permission at that point.
Yeah,
that's power.
Yeah.
So
that's two companies getting together to do this kind of thing. If we see an announcement of a third, then this is starting to pick up some momentum.
Keep an eye on Sega. Keep an eye on Arc System Works.
The big one would be NetherRealm if they decided to jump in on this.
Oh, man. They're also the biggest long shot by far. But
yeah, because of who they're owned by.
Yeah, they don't even put out a PC version of Injustice 2 yet.
Yeah. So. But yeah, keep your eyes out for this. It's going to be a very interesting one to watch.
Yes.
So in our, I think, second to last story for the day, because we've run pretty long already... Square Enix is pretty, tenacious about getting Final Fantasy XIV onto the Switch. I don't know why.
This would weaponize the game in a way that I'm not prepared for.
It's like, okay, Final Fantasy XIV on the console that you happen to have. Well, there goes your lunch break.
Yeah, it would be applied on my lunch break. It would be applied on my commute. It would be applied just so many
this
ways.
This would probably push me over.
I already spent so much time playing this game, it's not even funny. And if... Oh. Cramming the game onto the Switch just for sheer storage capacity reasons is going to be a challenge.
I think this would be a game that required an SD card.
Yes.
So what are they going to do if it needs to be patched?
They do it all in game.
Yeah, they do it all.
It does patch a lot. Like
In MMOs in general do that. So
yep. Yeah, might run into that same issue that NBA Playground guys are having. So
now, when they say they're being tenacious, I just picture Naoki Yoshida going into the Rick and Morty get your shit together tirade.
Yeah. This could be very, very fun and ruinous to many people's productivity.
Yes.
So, yeah.
But I'm all for it. I'm all for getting this game in as many places as you can get it. And putting it on the Switch would be a huge step toward making that happen.
Yeah. It would also have to play on the same servers, too, because that would be a requirement.
Yep. Yoshida has said that segregating servers would be a non-starter, and that's what's held it off of the Xbox One thus far.
Yeah. Mm. So.
Really? That's why they haven't done it?
Yep, because Microsoft said they want to keep the servers isolated, and Yoshida says, nope, fuck you. I guess it's staying PS4 exclusive.
I think that might change, given what Microsoft just did with Minecraft.
Yeah, and Sony seems to almost be taking the opposite route. I can't believe they pulled that bullshit, by the way. Sony saying, "Well, we don't want to do it because think of the children." Like, dude, I get on fucking PSN and go into a fucking game and hear the N-word dropped freely. You're going to sit here and tell me about the kids and, like, but Nintendo's on board, and you're like, well, I don't know if their standards with how people deal with children are really up to what Sony wants. Get the fuck out of here, dude.
Yeah. So, but yeah, some things will happen in the not-too-distant future with this. if Phil Spencer and Naoki Yoshida can get together, I think perhaps that Xbox One port will happen. Expect, although I think there's actually another reason that the Final Fantasy XIV isn't on the Xbox One at the moment.
Yep.
Mm. Power.
Oh. But the Switch, though?
This game ran on the PS3.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Stormblood doesn't.
Stormblood doesn't, but
yeah.
Final Fantasy XIV in general did. Now, yeah. I'm not one to compare the PS3 and the Switch, or the PS3 and the Xbox One, or the PS4 and the Xbox One, because I think especially the latter has been done ad nauseum anyway.
Yeah.
But
well,
it's a game that they could pretty easily fit on any platform they actually want to put it on, I think.
Yeah, I think they could do it on the Xbox One. The Switch would be fun to see what kind of cutbacks they have to make, because let's be honest here, the Switch is not a powerhouse by any stretch of the imagination.
The Switch is like a midget with big biceps. It looks good, but it ain't doing shit.
Yeah. I mean, you'd be looking at 720p, which, you know, on the Switch's native screen is totally fine. Yeah, we'll wait and see how that goes, because very interesting things could happen with this particular one. And it might be the stealth entry of cross-network play that we've kind of looked for, so keep an eye out. And finally, we'll end with something that, well, I think we're probably going to need a bumper for this. If this becomes a regular thing, it's going to be like shit Jim Ryan says.
Oh, God, we should make it shut the fuck up, Jim Ryan.
This needs a hashtag.
Yeah, so apparently this week he said that, indies are so 2014. It was great to talk about them in 2014, but now we've got VR and stuff to talk about, so they're no longer relevant.
Yeah, as if one thing is exclusive to the other. Like, well, you know, nobody's interested in indies anymore because they can strap these fucking goggles to their face and go to the next world. Fuck up, Jim Ryan. Fucking clown. That's the thing. We've talked about so much about, like, arrogant Sony, right? And this is, like, arrogant Sony. Like, this is the problem Sony has had since the PlayStation 3, is that they have an executive in there who probably doesn't even fucking play games, who just wants to make these fucking stupid-ass decisions. And like, I get it. He has to fucking represent the brand, but that's the problem. He's representing the brand. Like, you're going to sit here and say something. Like, indies, I think, it's an inarguable fact that indies also helped give part of the edge that Sony had, because Microsoft's ideas at the time, like, well, you have to give us something exclusive, blah, 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 where a lot of indies were like, fuck you, we can't even – it's hard enough to program for one system, let alone two, and then come up with something new to do it with. So the fact that Sony has gotten that edge and they know they're in the lead, and we've talked about this in the past when it comes to, like, BC and everything else, Sony knows they have this generation on lock, so they're not trying, and that's why they can pull stupid shit out of their ass. Like, BC's not important, and now, you know, indies aren't important. Like, what else is not important, Jim Ryan? Controllers? Like, what? I mean, what the fuck, man? Like, the fact is that everybody buys game consoles for different reasons, and I think over the last, particularly this generation, I think people have shown that AAA titles matter less and less compared to actually having a large breadth of titles that you can play so that anyone can play the kind of games that they want. And cutting out indies or making them say that they're not important when they were, you know, one of the big things that helped get you over the top, just because you want to sell VR goggles, is the stupidest shit I've heard in a very long time.
Yeah, I get what he's saying, because he's talking about the press conference at E3. That's it. He's not talking about on the platform itself, but he says it in the most stupid way. Like, it was just good to talk about in 2013, 2014. It is less relevant now. Like, yeah, indies don't need...
He's saying it's relevant, though, because they have a product to sell. Like, if VR wasn't there, I guarantee you they would have indies on that fucking stage.
Well, yeah, because they only have so much time. Yeah. It's trying to serve all these... keep these plates spinning.
They use half the time that they have.
They had a two-hour slot, and they used half of it.
Yeah. And
you know, they've got an amazing game about to come out this week. That's Pyre.
That's next month.
That should be on the show. That should be on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Greg was showing that game at E3, was he? Danreb?
No, they weren't. They weren't there.
Yeah, so you can't really show a game that's not there. It's also
maybe
like
it
there's
been there
only
if
so
Sony
much floor space
invited
to have it.
Yeah.
Well, it's also expensive as hell, and those guys are nearly done with their game. They don't want to necessarily have to fly people out there, make a special.
They're based
build.
In L.A.
Yeah, I think the other part, like, I understand your point, Chris. Like, the part of this came from the fact that this guy truly is just an executive. And so this is just stupid shit executives say. But at the same time, like, when you look at, like, compared to, like, what they did compared to, like, say, Microsoft had absolutely no issue showing off indies.
They got to sell their platform as just keep saying we still getting indies over here. And they're paying for a lot of these indies as well to get them exclusive, like PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds. They want to make sure that people come to their platform for these indies. And the whole thing about indies is they want to be on every platform anyway, because that's their best chance of making actual money off of this stuff.
Yeah.
Is to get everywhere as fast as they can. Sometimes it's not possible just due to their engines or how much manpower they have. And that's why it's important for, you know, them to get out there and, you know, try to get as much coverage as they can.
I think the difference here for me is that I would give Sony the benefit of the doubt if they hadn't pulled this shit like 5 times before in various capacities. Like it's readily transparent. No, with the way that they shift their focus, and then when they say, oh, well, this was important, but now it's not. Like, you can look at the way that they did back with the fucking six-axis controller when they got sued over Rumble. They were like, oh, Rumble's so last-gen, guys. And then when they fucking settled the lawsuit, they're like, it's important now, though. Like, that's Sony's MO is to just slough things off because they want to sell the next thing.
Except they're not cutting out indies. That's the thing. Indies are still as important as they've ever been. Jim Ryan's just shitting on all the people at Sony that are actively working with them, recruiting indies, and doing all this hard work to get them all the supplies and help they need to get their stuff on their platforms.
Which seems kind of a dumb thing to do.
Yeah.
That's why...
I'll keep the Don Matrix doll open for him.
Yeah. Like Chris was saying, like, he wasn't really talking about, you know, the company in general. I mean, obviously, he still has no idea what he was talking about. But the main thing he was going over was you know, he was defending their press conference in whatever manner that he could. The main thing, I mean, being on the show floor itself, there weren't that many indies to begin with. And if they were, they were either behind closed doors or in the corners that nobody actually visited. Looking back at Sony, there were a few indies, but they were mainly with VR. And I'm talking mainly of, like, what, Super Hot and that Rabbit game. I don't know what it was. But, yeah, the indies were really not – there wasn't that much of a huge presence for them. And it's going to be different come December once PSX rolls around, because not only is it all Sony, but the indies are actually there prominently. I'd expect that in December, so we'll see
and
what
Jim
happens.
Jim Ryan might still work there.
Because there'll be like PAX. Both the PAXs are going to be indie heavy. IndieCade, all these other events that are happening throughout the year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They get plenty of showcases to get their games out to the people. And I was looking at this, like at last PAX in March, Sony's slate of games they had in their booth was about 75% indie. So they're very much showcasing those people. Just E3 might not have been the greatest way to show that stuff, especially when you're trying to show off VR in their own booth, which requires a lot more space than just here's a station and a screen.
Well, I think their press conference sucked anyway, so...
Well, yeah.
Worth noting, like, half the VR stuff they were talking about were indies. So, there's that.
I just, you know, the way I'm seeing it is Sony really needs to be careful, because the messaging and the attitude that they've been displaying, or at least, you know, this particular part of Sony, I don't know if it's company-wide at this point. But they really run the risk of turning into the Sony that Microsoft punched in the face with the Xbox 360.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
cocky as fuck, right?
Yeah. So they really, really need to pay attention and
I think that's the other part. Like Chris, I think you're, you know, nobody, I don't think anybody's beleaguering your point, but I think more of it is this is sort of a pattern that Sony has shown for a very long time, and when they do this, they tend to fall on themselves, even if it's just a stupid executive saying stupid things. But it's not this executive saying one stupid thing once. He's done it a few times already.
Yeah.
And we've seen Sony kind of pull this dumb shit in the past, and then they sort of completely lose the plot. And then, like, to Danner's point, like this – or excuse me, to Phil's point, you know, that is – this kind of arrogance is what allowed Microsoft to trounce them last time. Yeah. So, like – and I think for me, as far as looking at it as more of like a company's behavior, that's one of the things that bothers me the most about it, because they really sold themselves this generation on being about like the players and the games and blah, 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 blah. And it almost feels like they're stepping back away from that. Even if it's a stupid executive saying something, I mean, this is to me, this is similar to Matrick going like, okay, so what, when people don't have internet, what do they do? And Matrick was like, well, you can buy an Xbox 360. Like, wait a minute, asshole. You're trying to sell me a new piece of equipment, but you're telling me to go with the old one because the way you set it up is stupid. Like that's what this feels like to me. Like I get to like obviously to the point. You know, he was okay. Well, yeah, it's important for us at this show to have VR because that we have that product, you know, in the wind, and we're trying to sell that, and that makes perfect sense. But the attitude that it gave off because of the way that he's been behaving is more along the lines of, yeah, whatever. We used them when we needed to, and now we don't need them as much, and we're going to focus on this other bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, they need to give him a bulk egg and say, go sit in the corner for a while.
Yeah, they're right.
Basically.
Because you're making the rest of the hardworking people at the company look bad.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's
make it look like they're not actually doing any work.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like there's this Engadget article that has a really stupid premise to it. They go to a point to say that Devolver Digital is a huge threat to Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo as far as indies are concerned. Because they're an indie publisher, so they're making lots of deals with indies. And somehow that's a threat to Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo because that gives them one point of contact versus, say, a dozen for whatever their thing is. Like, there's tons of indie publishers out there, like Double Fine, 505, Raw Fury, Finji, Curb Digital. There's all these others that are helping these indie studios because not everybody has the business chops to go at it alone.
Yeah.
You know, there's some that manage to do that, like obviously like Tom Happ with working with Dan Edelman.
Yeah.
You got the couple others that's like, we're just the one guy managed to have the right product that overrides any sort of business sense they might have. They can just start selling this. And the thing with indies is that there's just so many of them out there, so many games.
Yeah.
It's hard for anyone.
They're all Metroidvanias, remember?
Most
of them. Yeah. And so it's so hard for any one of these platform holders to somehow come in and swoop all of them up. They're just going to fall through the cracks, and you know, Sony will pick up stuff that Microsoft ignores. Microsoft will pick up stuff that Sony ignores. Nintendo will pick up stuff that the others ignore.
Well, I think the other part of it is interesting too. Is the gut check reaction that I got from some friends of mine that work in the industry is when that dude said that bullshit. Was it reminded them of when Nintendo fired their indie developer management team? Like, who was the main guy over there? Like, they were like, so wait, I can't remember his name, but it was like kind of like
Dan Adelman.
So it's like, so wait a minute. If you're going to do this, what does this mean for us? And how does this work? Like, that's the kind of thing. That was kind of what it struck me as. But, like, and like I don't know how aware you guys are of this stuff, but, like, indie developers have account managers at Sony.
Yeah.
So they have a point of contact that they can reach out to. They can say, we're having this trouble, we're having that. And it seems to be more – along the lines on if you get a lot of support from Sony really seems to depend, at least from what I've read and from what I've surmised from talking to people that are working on stuff, really is up to who your account manager is and the type of resources they can get you. So it seems like Sony has stepped away from being more partnering in that sense to going, we're going to assign you to a person and it's going to be kind of hit or miss on whether or not you get what you need. I don't think anybody is doubting that they're going to continue to support that, because the fact of the matter is, particularly when you look at Sony's E3 content, since it would might as well have been 2018, the trailer, Sony obviously needs to be able to fill those gaps. So, and they, I don't think they can just do it with VR, because I think VR is a limited product. Like, I'm not going to buy VR goggles. I don't know about anybody else. It's something I'm not interested in. I bought a console to play video games, and to play them in a very specific way. Like, not, I think, like, to sort of dovetail into like the Switch talk, that's one of the reasons the Switch is so successful, is the Switch isn't gimmick. It's not based around some gimmick. It's a fucking console. Yeah, you can take it with you, but it is a fucking console. It has a regular fucking controller. Like, it works the way that you expect it to. It's not built around, oh, you know, we have this one thing and you can swing your arms around like an idiot. And, like, they don't do any of that. So, whereas VR seems so narrow to me. Like, we want you to go out and buy this $400 piece of equipment that's the same amount as, you know, our pro version of this console. But, like, so that in and of itself is limited. So, but, like, seeing kind of Sony step back from that, where it seems like Microsoft is diving more into it, like, we realize we're on the bad end of this, so we're going to do whatever we can to get as much as we can in here. That is the exact same position that they were in, and then Microsoft came out with the 360 and beat the shit out of Sony. So that's kind of where I'm curious if this goes, because I don't like arrogant Sony. I like Sony, like PS1, PS2 Sony, like, we fucked Nintendo in the face Sony. Like, I like that Sony. I don't like this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like with Microsoft and Indies, like, they still have that parity clause is still going on.
Yeah,
there's still people that are having problems with that. I forget what the indie fighting game, that's like the half wrestling game, fighting game, like the weird looking people. I forget what it's called.
Dive Kick?
No.
No.
It's like a 3D wrestling game.
Battle?
Sort of.
No.
No, don't remember.
I forget, but they were saying, like, we're not going to Xbox because of the parity clause. They want us to do this, you know, either get out the same day as the PS4 version that they're working on, or add extra stuff or this stuff, and they don't have the means to do that. Yeah. And it's like, this is 2017. Microsoft has done a good job of making people forget that exists, but it still seems to be around. Mm. And from what I've read from people that have worked with Microsoft, they make them sign NDAs, essentially, to not talk about it.
Yeah.
So that's like kind of forcing people to not talk about it, not acknowledge its existence, even though it still is around.
Mm. Yeah, and you know what? That's one of the things that Microsoft should have jettisoned a long time ago. One of the things that I think is crazy is that the indies are the other reason why I think it's important for me is the indies have kept the Vita up. Yeah. Like, I don't think the Vita would exist in the way that it does and have the games that it does if it hadn't been for indies. And so for me, knowing that I could buy something and I play on a home console, and then hopefully if it's crossplay, I can do it on the Vita, is a huge selling point. And it seems like that's completely lost on Sony, but it's not lost on the indies, because essentially for them, that's, in a way, it's two platforms. They can guarantee a sale on one and still get it with the other.
And I've had a number of Vita developers like fiercely fighting back against media, trying to set a narrative that, oh, you can't make money on Vita anymore. And they're like, no, we still make a good bit of money. It's well worth our investment to keep working on Vita.
Yeah.
It's like, as much as like you think nobody makes Vita games anymore, like, there's a, I think his name is Luke Bernard, worked on like Plague Road and some of these other games. And like, he primarily describes himself as a Vita developer. Like, is very much a rah-rah Vita, still makes money for us. We were, you know, probably going more on just finding his niche and going in on that. But that's so interesting to see, like, there's that much variety of talent out there that people find their own niches. Say, this works really well for us. We're going to keep doing this. Yeah. Even if it's not the hip indie thing to do.
Yeah. When it stops working out for us, then we'll do something else.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
yeah, I was reading a Gama Sutra article. It's like a bunch of interviews with indies after the E3 stuff happened. And there's one talking about, I think it was Future Lab, who did Velocity 2X, have a new PSVR game. They talk about how their customer is not the gamer. It's Sony. They work with a particular part of Sony called Strategic Content.
Yeah, they said, like, we want to make Sony look good. That's the way we look at it. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, it's like they want to make cool stuff for Sony because they support them. And this particular group of people are all about just offering them support but not trying to direct them anywhere or tell them what to do. And they really like that, and that's sort of why they've been there with, like, PlayStation Minis on the PSP, the PlayStation Mobile stuff on the Vita. They've been all over that stuff, and they're excited about that stuff. It's like, oh, that's pretty cool. You guys found your weird little niche, and it's doing well for you.
Yeah. So,
I think probably the best way to say it is just, Sony, don't be dicks.
Yeah. I think that's what we can take away from this.
Don't demean
someone muzzled Jim Ryan.
Yeah.
Don't demean the people in your own company.
Shuyo Shida, handle your boy.
Yes.
Get your boy. Get your boy.
Yeah.
We'll put you on the hit. We'll put you on the kill zone beat if you don't shut up.
I think too, though, like, when you if that's that sort of attitude that becomes prevalent, where you shit on the people that have helped make you successful, don't be Matrix Light. That's not a good look, man.
When you do that, the people that make you successful will leave. That's that's how that works.
And especially now, when there are more options, and it seems, especially when I think too, when you have two competitors at this point, who, if they are strategic about it, could eat your fucking lunch when it comes to that segment of gaming. Like, you got to watch that shit. Don't, like, Sony's biggest thing is they can't act like this is PS2 all over again. Even if they're 30 million consoles ahead, like, this shit can switch now, especially now that they seem to want these console generations to run longer. They're doing iterative hardware. Like, there's plenty of time for people to jump ship. And I think, frankly, I think the biggest dark horse in the indie game is going to be the Switch. Because the Switch is essentially, if they get the indies right, can be the Vita point two, the Vita 2.0 with Nintendo support, which is a fucking dangerous thing to be if you're looking for a place where people can play all kinds of different games. And I think that's the biggest thing that's important about indies in general, is that there's a level of content that you can get from indies I think that has been completely underserved by the regular market for a very long time. Like we talked about a minute ago, everything's a Metroidvania. But even then, like, just the amount of, like, 2D stuff that's out there that all of these companies abandoned 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago has a resurgence and is doing really well. And it's really, like, well-crafted stuff. Like, and then there's really unique ideas out there. Like, I don't know if any of you guys, this came out a while back, but one of the coolest games that I played in the last 2 or 3 years was called Unepic. Did anybody ever play that?
Yeah, I played it on PC.
It's cool as shit. So you start out and everything looks 8-bit, and then as you level up, all of a sudden everything turns to 16-bit graphics and stuff like that. Like, and that in and of itself is just such an interesting, unique idea to play out through the game. And now, granted, all of these indie games, some of them aren't that polished. Some of them do one or two things right and then do other things wrong. But it's one of those things where I think if you cultivate these groups of people, then you're going to be seeing, as time goes on, really incredible games that the overall larger industry has stopped making. And if you can be a resource for those people, and if you can be the place where people are going to put those games besides on the PC, then there's a lot of money there. It's just like, and I don't know if any of you guys ever used to follow football back in the day. You guys remember Emmitt Smith? Emmitt Smith used to get 6.5 yards each carry. So that meant you gave that motherfucker the ball twice, you were getting a first down. And everybody was – but I remember people used to shit on him. Like, well, he doesn't run long. He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to. They still got in the end zone, motherfuckers. That's how this works. That's what wins games. And that's kind of the thing that I hope Sony doesn't end up missing here.
Yeah. So I think that's as good a place as any to call it a show. It was a hell of a good discussion this week. A lot of very – fun topics to talk about.
We also hope that you enjoyed the introduction of our new mascot, Smashcock, the Smashpad Rooster.
He hates Jim Ryan.
Yeah. So, all right. So, we got a lot of E3 content up on the site. Dan Reb wrote most of it because he was there. Go to smashpad.com, and you can find most of that there. You can also subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, or your favorite podcatcher. With that, I'm Felipe Denolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Daniel Victoria.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And we'll see you next week.